The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the Church and the world. Just love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. And just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. I know when the solstice is, and that's kind of June 20th, June 21st, but I think we have really two beginnings of summer. One of those is the Memorial Day weekend, which is kind of the beginning of summer. And then I think we have the official beginning of summer with the 4th of July weekend, because nobody, even the holdouts, can kind of claim that summer hasn't begun once the July 4th weekend begins. And especially when it occurs on a Monday, then we get a big 3-day weekend, and some people kind of cheat a little bit on the Friday before. And so we are really right in the middle of summer as we kind of are considering what the Church does in the world. We consider how the world can be more just and more compassionate. And this week we're going to continue on talking about a topic that is, you know, a little bit sad. It's a little bit very, very problematic, tragic. We're going to kind of continue to talk a little bit about what went on in Orlando later on in the show. And we're going to speak in the early part of the show about kind of chaplaincy in general, and how does one kind of care for people in situations where there is illness and sickness, and how does the spiritual part of our humanity fit into that. And so a few minutes, we're going to speak with Reverend Eric Hall, who is he works at Healthcare Chaplaincy Network, and he's also a minister at the Eastchester Community Church in Eastchester, New York, just right outside of New York City. And kind of later on in the show, we're going to speak with two chaplains from Orlando, Stephen Binkley and Father William Gorin, and some of the work that they did shortly after the tragedy in Orlando a few weeks ago, and some of the work that is continuing to go on down there. And so I think, why don't we go to our first guest, the Reverend Eric Hall, the President and CEO of Healthcare Chaplaincy Network. Thank you for joining us, Reverend Hall.
Good afternoon, Monsignor. Thanks so much for having me.
Good. I'm delighted that you are with us. Why don't you tell our listeners about the Healthcare Chaplaincy Network? What is that all about?
Sure. Healthcare Chaplaincy Network has been in existence for well over 50 years now. Its origins go back to a Protestant community, mostly Presbyterian, who were looking to see, you know, what kind of infrastructure was needed to care for those of the Protestant traditions, you know, in various churches throughout New York City. What has happened over the 50 years, however, is that it has been really the cutting edge of the research around what is the impact of spiritual care on healthcare. What are the needs of chaplains? How do they need to be prepared? How do they need to be educated? And probably most importantly, you know, is how do we fully integrate, you know, spiritual care into healthcare? How do we not have spiritual care as just something that perhaps happens only at end of life, but rather is something that is fully incorporated throughout the entire process of a wholeness approach of caring for the human person?
Now, isn't that the job of a congregation?
It can be, for sure. In a lot of cases, however, you know, especially nowadays, Monsignor, some folks, you know, are unchurched. They don't have a tradition. They don't have a specific spiritual tradition that they adhere to, but they are spiritual in their self-description. And so for many individuals now, it does come down to the fact that they don't belong to a congregation, and that it is now within the hospital construct where there's this opportunity to be had to make sure that, you know, these folks, if they're not connected and if they don't have resource of their own, that they are being cared for spiritually as well.
Well, now that's kind of a wonderful introduction to what the ministry is about. I was intrigued by your talking about research. How do you research spirituality?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, for many of us, yourself, for me, and for many others who are listening right now, you know, spirituality and the value of faith in our life is without question. Many of us, you know, have grown up in homes that have been surrounded by examples of individuals that, you know, have simply held on to their faith tradition, no matter what, it is understood and seen and clearly practiced, you know, as a vital, necessary part of life. And for sure, you know, that has been consistent. However, you know, probably within the last 20 years or so, healthcare has really taken a change. And so everything within healthcare really comes under much more scrutiny. And a lot of this is being driven, one, by, you know, effectiveness of interventions, effectiveness of procedures, but a lot of it, too, now is being driven by reimbursement. What is healthcare? What are insurances? What is Medicare actually paying for? So across the entire gamut of the hospital experience, from when you enter the door to when you leave, there is this conversation that goes on about, you know, what are the values and how have people benefited and what is the data that supports these types of activities. And so spiritual care in a very real way within the healthcare system has had to take a serious look and say, look, is there or are there opportunities for us to, for, you know, to bring a level of research to what it is that we do that could collect data around the impact, good, bad, or indifferent? And really, over the last 15 years, there has been a significant amount of research, probably more than ever before in the history of spirituality, that actually does show very clear benefit of interventions and health and faith on a person's outcomes.
So, Reverend Hall, so give me one of those studies and tell me what they studied and what it showed.
Sure. Numerous studies around the area of cancer.
Just give me one.
You know, there are studies that, you know, have come out of Sloan. There have been studies that have come out of healthcare chaplaincy as well, where individuals are challenged to or participating in, you know, a faith tradition. Spiritual care is provided. They are visited by chaplains, you know, as opposed to individuals who, under similar circumstances, are not visited by.
So what do they do? Do you do a control group? You don't visit some, you visit others?
Yeah. Well, you know, in as much as individuals were not able to be visited because of time restraints and the like, looking at their outcomes as opposed to folks that have been visited. And so the data around this is clearly reflected, one, in patient satisfaction surveys, you know, that when a patient leaves a hospital, they're asked to, you know, respond to a survey. And those individuals, one of the major contributing factors for greater patient satisfaction, you know, happens to be the provision of spiritual care through a chaplain. But more than that, what we also find is that the use of meditation, the use of prayer, adherence to one's faith traditions actually does assist the body in healing more completely than without.
We're speaking with Reverend Eric Hall, who is the president and the CEO of Healthcare Chaplaincy Network, which is basically an organization that kind of fosters and does a little bit of research and tries to draw that connection between kind of, in my words, getting better and spirituality and in healthcare facilities and probably not in healthcare facilities also. Right. Reverend Hall, so talk a little bit, because I think one of the things that you mentioned, which is certainly, you know, a phenomenon that we all experience, is that there are a number of people who kind of claim to be spiritual, but they don't belong to any religious tradition or stuff. How does that work out?
You know, there are these existential questions that are proper to everyone, and I think they are enhanced, if you will, and come to mind more readily when we are significantly ill. When we are sick and we are challenged with health issues, you know, the questions always do come up. You know, why is this happening to me? What have I done to deserve this? Questions of, you know, if I die, you know, what happens? And so, you know, the chaplain can be of, you know, a Catholic background, Protestant, could be Muslim, could be Jewish, can be, and their training really is to accept a person where they are with their own faith tradition or not, but to allow them to explore, allow the patient to explore some of these questions in order to find, you know, meaning and purpose.
So how do you do that? Because you're only in the hospital for 4 minutes these days.
Yeah. Well, you know, right. So that's true, right? So for many cases, right, the sooner they could get you out, the better. But, you know, at a time of significant illness, or in the case of, say, palliative care, which is a longer period of time where a person is significantly ill or can be significantly ill for a longer period of time, there are the opportunities to, you know, start the process of at least questioning and helping the patient form a construct, in order to analyze where they're coming from. And, you know, none of this is really surprising. We've talked about the human experience as, you know, body, mind, and spirit. I mean, we talk about all that all the time, and the research that's been done around the body has brought around diagnosis and better care and treatments. The process that has been done and the work that has been done in the area of the mind, you know, has brought us to a much greater understanding of the impact and the connection between body and mind. And it just seems now is the time where we are seriously taking a look at, you know, what is the human spirit and how is that fed and how does that interplay with the other pieces? And we're finding there's a real connectivity.
But what is the connection?
You know, I think the connection is we've become really good in a lot of ways of taking care of our bodies, and we've become very aware of how important it is to take care of our mind and emotions. But I think for many of us, we're just now beginning to realize and to be able to show and point to the enormous importance that needs to be applied to caring for, you know, the human spirit in the mix of it all. And, you know, for those of us of Christian denominations and the like, you know, we have a faith tradition that feeds our spirit, and we are able to fall back to that. And it really just shows, you know, as more and more research has indicated, the interplay between what we believe and how we view ourselves, our lives, our illnesses, and how that really contributes to getting better.
We're speaking with Reverend Eric Hall, who's the president, the CEO of Healthcare Chaplaincy Network, and we're talking about the connection between spirituality and healthcare. We're talking about the fact that these days there are a number of people who would describe themselves as spiritual, but they wouldn't say that they belong to any particular faith tradition. You know, Reverend Hall, let's talk a little bit, because since you did mention, you know, our Christian tradition, and there's something absolutely, I think, you know, profound about that tradition because of our understanding of the role of suffering. And yep. It seems to me that that's something that really can be a great strength to somebody who's going through a very, very difficult illness, whether it be short term or over a length of time. Do you find that is able to be used to help a person deal with their illness?
Oh, for sure, Monsieur. Look, as you do, I'm sure. You know, we have been bedside ourselves how many times, and you know, for us, you know, as Christians, as disciples of Jesus, to be able to recount his suffering and the fact that, you know, he is present where we are and understands what we're going through and how we're experiencing this, and that, you know, to point to the promise of the resurrection, you know, are you know, just enormously valuable for us as Christians to be able to make those types of connection in a very real way with our God and our Creator. And so, you know, there are these are gifts, you know, in our in our most difficult times of being challenged by health or being faced with our own mortality as well, to be able to fall back into, put into perspective what we're experiencing in light of, you know, who we call Lord and Savior, which is Jesus Christ.
You know, one of the things which I have found at times to be somewhat helpful, it might be a little bit of a cop-out, but, you know, when people oftentimes ask the question, you know, why? Why am I suffering? Why did God do this to me? Why me? And my response is, hey, I don't know, but we believe in a God who did it to his only son. Why don't you ask him when you get to heaven? I mean, because I don't know the answer to that. I don't know why God did it to the son. It doesn't answer, but we're left at that great mystery of suffering. It is a reality in our lives and in the world.
And for me, you know, being bedside, you know, with a parishioner, for me, it's reminding them that just like Jesus, you know, we're never alone. And even when it gets really difficult and when we are challenged and when it appears as though every situation is possibly going against us, as they did, you know, to Jesus, that, you know, he ultimately acknowledges the presence of the Father on the cross and declares that his Spirit is entrusted not just to anyone's hands, but to his. And so I think that is something that is of just enormous value to us to hold on to when we do struggle and suffer. And sometimes suffering catches us in such a way that it challenges every possible piece of who and what it is that we are and what we believe. And it really pushes it to limits. And maybe there's something about that level of conflict that's really good, because it helps us sort it out. It's no longer just something we've read or something that we speak with our mouths, but we've never really felt with our hearts. And I'm sure both of us can talk about scenarios where people have really come to experience the presence of the Lord at those moments when they're really sick. And you can see it in their eyes, you can see it in their face, and you can see it in their caregivers, you know, that they are also put to peace because their loved one is fully, you know, aware and appreciative of the Spirit and the presence of Jesus at that time.
You know, it's the other part of that. When we were speaking with Reverend Eric Hall, the president, the CEO of Healthcare Chaplaincy Network, and we're speaking about spirituality, healthcare from our Christian tradition. We're speaking about it in terms of the suffering and the cross. One of the things that I always think it's pretty important to remind people of, because I'll be perfectly frank, I think there's part of our Christian tradition that at times has spoken about suffering in a way that it almost seemed we were supposed to want it, because if we really wanted it, then we were really following Christ. And I think, you know, right before, you know, depending on which one of the Gospels you read, but depending right before the time that Jesus turns his spirit over to the Father, he says, hey, take it away from me. I don't want to suffer.
And so
I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, in my own experience I've found, give people permission to complain to God, to tell them they don't want to suffer. They don't have to embrace it in the sense of this is the best thing since sliced bread. They can, you know, they can be a little angry at God and want to get rid of it.
Sure. Yeah, without doubt. I mean, clearly, you know, there's also this, you know, merging tradition, if you will, within Christianity, that, you know, we shouldn't suffer at all, and that suffering somehow implies, you know, a lack of prosperity or a lack of faith.
Right.
And I think that's problematic as well. I mean, there is something to be said about the life of Jesus and what he experienced. And we as disciples, I mean, Jesus pretty much makes it clear, you know, what they've done to me and what I'm experiencing, you too will experience. Somehow we skip over that part and we think that, you know, it all has to be, you know, roses and suffering is not
Well, let me tell you, if there's somebody who thinks that I got a bridge, I want to sell that person, because you can't walk down the street without realizing you don't have to look for suffering. Suffering is part of the condition that we live in, and it's you know, as I often say, you know, Jesus accepted it, which isn't quite the same as wanting it or running after it. It's kind of like it's part of what it means to be human, and it's part of what it means at times to be faithful as Jesus was. So,
and you know, Monsignor, if I may, know, your sacrament of anointing of the sick is just such a powerful, I mean, the Catholic tradition of anointing of the sick is, you know, complete with its prayers and its symbolism, you know, is again, just such a real visible presence or an outward sign of God's, you know, action, you know, through that sacrament and what it entails and what it carries and what it brings and reassures, you know, the person who is sick with. It's very profound for the tradition.
Hey, Reverend Eric Hall, thanks for spending time with us today, sharing your insights, and thanks for the work you've done to kind of make sure that we look at mind, body, spirit in order to kind of holistically try to heal, to make a person kind of grow and to be fulfilled. So thanks so much for being with us on Just Love today.
None at all, Monsignor. Thanks for having me.
Great. Reverend Eric Hall, the president, the CEO of Healthcare Chaplaincy Network, a network that tries to make sure that we always see spiritual care related to healthcare, and to try to make sure that we kind of look at the person as a whole person, which I think is critically important as we kind of engage in an ever more emphasis on efficiency in healthcare, effectiveness in healthcare. We can't forget that part of that is dealing with the human spirit as part of kind of a holistic and a healing approach. We're going to take a break right now and we'll continue our conversation. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a minute or two on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just than it will be more compassionate. You know, on Just Love, we kind of speak with those people who kind of help us understand the world better and kind of help us to reflect a little bit upon our Catholic Christian values and how we see the world through that prism. You know, I want to take a few minutes now and speak with you about a topic that is pretty awful, it's pretty horrendous, and it's just not a topic that is often spoken about, as rightly so. It's just awful. And I do it for two reasons. One is, this week we celebrate the feast of Maria Goretti, who is a saint. And she was a saint who was canonized kind of at the very kind of beginning of the 20th century, so about 100 years or so ago, because she was someone who kind of resisted being raped by somebody in her neighborhood. And as a result of that, she was killed. She was stabbed to death. She was brought to the hospital and she didn't survive. She apparently forgave the person who killed her and who tried to rape her. And it was just a horrendous, horrendous story. And not too long after her death, she was canonized. I also kind of wanted to bring up that topic because I also saw a movie this past weekend, which I might speak a little bit more about in the future. It was a movie called The Innocents, and it was about a tragic story, true story, of a really awful, horrendous, tragic situation in Poland when, I believe, as the Russian troops were coming through, some of them stormed, took over a monastery, and some of them actually raped the sisters who were in that convent. And in fact, some of the sisters became pregnant. And the whole movie is about what happens and a doctor who comes to kind of care for them and take care of them. But I mention that because rape is just such a awful, horrendous crime, violation, whatever word you can use. And the reason I want to mention it is because sometimes there has been a part of our Catholic tradition which hasn't placed as much emphasis as it should upon the fact that people do have a right to kind of defend themselves and that we should never blame the victim of awful acts against those victims. And the real thing that I want to emphasize again and again is that despite our belief in the permanence of marriage, in the fact that we believe that those married relationships should exist and last forever, that our belief in that in no way means that a woman, which is mostly the case, who is the victim of sexual assault, of domestic violence, that woman should stay in that relationship. And in fact, we believe that a person has a right and that woman has a right to get out of that situation, to protect herself, and oftentimes it also means protecting her children. And, you know, rightly we raise up heroic virtue, as in the case of Maria Goretti, but in raising up that heroic virtue, we can never, ever communicate that victims need to or victims should permit themselves to be victimized or that they cannot defend themselves or that they cannot take steps to make their situation better. And for those who have been involved in issues of domestic violence, sexual assault, the complexity of what goes on there, the victimization that goes on there, the stigma that is attached is so great that whatever supports we can bring to that situation to enable that person to move forward, to deal as they need to deal with that situation, we should. And so I think it's very important from our Catholic Christian tradition, which stresses the permanency of marriage, the importance of enduring relationships, that we make sure that we are clear in communicating that that doesn't mean that a woman is to be a victim of violence, that a woman is to remain in a difficult situation, a situation which is violent, in which her rights are being trampled upon. Now, again, we have talked on occasion on this show about what are the remedies for that? How does one deal with the situation? Because there is oftentimes real physical danger. There's danger of being hurt, violence. So how a woman extricates herself from that situation is not always very easy because of the complexity of it. But I do think at a time when we kind of do raise up saints, I think it's very important to recognize that we absolutely affirm the right of a person to defend themselves in those situations and the right of a person to leave those situations for their own protection and for the protection of the children. And there is no way that scripture should be read in a way that indicates that that is not the right of a woman to do that. So it's a very somber issue, but because the church is celebrating this week the Feast of Maria Regretti as a model to be held up, it's important that we kind of talk the whole story about what is going in those very, very difficult and tragic situations. I think we will take a break again, and when we come back, we'll speak with our second guests who have been involved with dealing with the victims of the violence of terrorism, the violence of hate that was in Orlando. So the best thing we can do to counteract those types of violent acts is to just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself. And when we do that, each are on our own, taking that personal responsibility together, we create a world that is more just and more compassionate. Join us when we come back in a few minutes on And Just Love, the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church and the world. Just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. You know, our nation, our world is still reeling from the awful tragedy, the violence, the death that was associated with the killings at the Orlando nightclub, the Pulse. And so we're going to continue to have a little bit of a conversation, and I'm delighted that two of the chaplains who have been involved in trying to bring some healing to that situation are with us today. The chaplain is Reverend Stephen Binkley, who is the head of the staff chaplain at Orlando Regional Medical Center, and Father Bill Gehring, who is Catholic chaplain, who has been, he's at Annunciation Catholic Church, and he helped out in the days after that tragedy. Reverend Binkley and Father Gehring, thank you so much for being with us this on Just Love.
Thank you very much. It's a privilege and a pleasure to join with you. This is Reverend Binkley.
Okay. So, Reverend Binkley, you were there immediately after the tragedy. I don't mean to be ghoulish, but share some of the emotion, the feeling as you were there ministering to the people who were brought in.
Sure, I can speak to that a little bit, Monsignor. Let me make one slight correction. I'm not one of the heads. I'm actually just one of the trauma chaplains that serves here in our trauma center. And it's a blessing to be able to serve in that capacity. Orlando Regional Medical Center is a level one trauma center. And we are actually just three blocks away from the Pulse nightclub where this tragedy took place. While I wasn't on duty, I was called in by our manager to come and assist, and got here about 30 minutes after or so the first patient started arriving. It was just a very surreal type experience when I got the text. It indicated, you know, come in, mass shooting, 20 victims expected. So as I was driving into town, I could see the helicopter hovering in the air, and as I was approaching the hospital, I could see, you know, police cars just kind of at intersections as if they had a perimeter established. So I, you know, didn't know exactly what we were coming into and didn't really know what was happening at the time. But when I got in, you know, it really... really set me back a little bit. I mean, we train for these, we prepare for these. We just had one of our practice mock casualty drills a couple of months prior, it was just a very surreal experience in the trauma room there, where we are. The patient, you know, comes in, and part of our role as the chaplain on duty is to help our staff identify who they are. They come in pre-registered, so that way we don't have to worry about registering them as they arrive. They're pre-registered and under a generic name, and so our responsibility first is to try to identify, A, who they are, and B, put them in connection with any family members. And especially in this situation, it was very important for us to try to connect them with someone that would be a source of comfort, a source of strength for them, a source of peace in the midst of what they had experienced. And so when I got into the trauma room and took report from the trauma chaplain that was on duty, we began to disseminate, you know, coverage areas, and we had a total of six chaplains that came in to help us do this. There are lots of images, you know, from the patients coming in. I really don't remember a lot of the sounds. It just kind of it just seemed very surreal. you know, the very first patient, I was able to sit there with her for a few moments, talk with her, understand who she is, where she's coming from, and we were able to get her on the phone, thankfully, right away with a family member of hers. And so those are some of the things in the midst of the crisis, in the midst of the tragedy, that really stick out in my mind of trying to be a comforting presence and trying to help a patient experience a sense of, okay, I'm in a safe place now. I'm going to be okay.
We're speaking with Reverend Stephen Binkley, who is a staff chaplain at the Trauma Center at Orlando Health. And also we're going to speak in a few minutes with Father Bill Gehring, who is at Annunciation Catholic Church, who kind of later on has been helping out there. You know, what you've just mentioned to me, Reverend Binkley, is probably something that, you know, those of us who kind of watch the tragedy on television really were probably unaware of. I mean, the first thing you always listen, oh, so many people were killed and dead. So many people were in critical condition. But there were probably a lot of people who were brought to the hospital who were suffering psychological trauma, who maybe physically didn't have life-threatening injuries, but certainly had injuries and had trauma that needed the help of a chaplain.
Yes, yes. And I can remember there were usually about two of us, I think, covering the trauma room at the same time because it's a large trauma room. And so when the patients would be brought back, we would just kind of... You take the next one, I'll take this one, and go for that way. And one of my counterparts, Chevin Reichert, was there, and she took care of this young lady that had come in. And that was just one of those blessings in the midst of it, that this young lady, you know, had Chevin Reichert there next to her, and she was very tearful, very emotional, understandably. And I remember just watching Chevin Reichert be able to bring a sense of comfort and peace to her in the midst of talking her through, you know, some of the things that were going to happen to her as the trauma team would do their assessments, and being able to get the information that we needed to get, and then after those initial assessments, being able to put this young lady on the phone with her family. You know, though that was a very important thing to do, you know, for this young lady, you know, for just a sense of comfort in the midst of the physical pain, but also that emotional and even spiritual trauma. I mean, this event was about, you know, nearly 100 folks that they were gathered in a place that they considered safe and welcoming, supportive. There's a sense of community that's felt and experienced and expressed by, and it was taken from them in an act of horrific violence. You know, and so we sometimes forget, in the midst of what happened, that this is about these, you know, folks, 49 individuals who died, but also, you know, 44, 45, I don't have the exact numbers of survivors that are continuing to experience this, as well as, you know, the first responders, the folks that are receiving the patients, and you know, employees. It really reminds me, you know, I've always said that the trauma doesn't just affect the patient, it affects the family. But this is something that also affected our entire city.
Well, that's a good segue, Reverend Binkley. Father Bill Gehring, you kind of became involved not immediately afterwards, but slightly afterwards. How did you begin to kind of deal with some of those people, the victims, after the immediate response was moving to the next stage?
All right. Immediately after they were basically treated or treatments were started, et cetera, and we found out where the patients had been placed, if they were placed in rooms or some of them were in pre-op, we did our best to approach them and talk to them. And if family members had, you know, come in, even though we couldn't get them all to the bedside right away, we were able to act as a kind of liaison between the patient and the family. And that would continue on for the next 2 weeks. We still have one or two patients still left in the hospital. And it was a very tense time to the extent that there was such a volume of things that had to be done and had to be done in a very efficient and a rather quick manner that we were able to get as many identified, located, and get in touch with next of kin if that was the case that we were able to do, or, you know, in some cases, if we couldn't get direct answers, we pick up a patient's cell phone. If they came in with a cell phone, we could start calling the numbers and see if we could find out who this person was. You know, it's very interesting when people get a phone call from a stranger on a friend's phone line, and we have to ask them some questions. You know, do you know this person? And to identify them in some ways that we didn't already have an identification. And it was a very, I could say it was a stressful time, even though we go through mass casualty drills on a regular basis, as Chaplain Steve said. It's part of our routine that we go through these drills and we're prepared to do this. And we also had to remember that the hospital still had some 400 and some odd patients in it that were other medical patients, you know, at the same time. So things were very, very tense. Security was very high. And so there was only one way in and one way out of the building to allow people in and out, because there were other people coming to the hospital to visit their loved ones who were not a part of this tragedy. But the emphasis that we had right at that moment, that day on Sunday, was basically with those that were in the tragedy. And it was a very tense time, but it was a very good time for us to be able to put into practice what we have been training for the last couple of years.
Father Gehring, how long have you been a chaplain at Orlando Health?
Just finishing 13 years.
And this is kind of a really banal question, but I assume this was the largest mass tragedy that you had to deal with.
Yes, it was. It was the very largest.
Well, there's things about this that kind of were just so different than your usual work as a chaplain there over the 13 years?
Other than it was just a very high volume and a high intensity, because it was important that we get in touch with family members for the patients that were here. When an ordinary patient comes into the hospital, usually we have family information, et cetera, and it isn't working very much under the gun. But right now, at that time, that Sunday, we were working under the gun, because we had family members and relatives that were showing up at the hospital looking and worrying about their loved ones. And first thing is, we couldn't give them a lot of information. They'd have to give us information so that we could maybe identify somebody. But this is what we went through. This is what we practice. And it worked very well. I mean, I felt that it went very well that way. You know, we had, by evening time, we had virtually all of the patients that were still living identified.
Wow, that was very good work. Hey, Reverend Binkley, so let me ask you a question. You kind of were there overnight, and then you left in the morning to go to your parish to kind of preach in services that morning. What'd you preach on?
Well, I was scheduled to preach at the church where I attend. I actually prepared a message, you know, ahead of time. It was based out of Lamentations 3:21 that reads in part, "Yet I still dare to hope."
Now, that was before the tragedy?
That was before the tragedy.
Okay. And what'd you preach on?
I kept the same text, kept the same main points, because the points that I was trying to deliver were really points based out of where does our hope lie? Does it lie in the circumstances that we face, the experiences that we have, or is there something deeper? And the writer of Lamentations was pointing to something deeper, that their experience of their faith in God, that you know, they could rely upon, that God, who has delivered them from situations and circumstances in the past, is faithful and will hold them close and will continue to do so. Now, it was very difficult. I left the hospital at 7 o'clock to be in the pulpit at 8 o'clock. And so it was the first service was difficult, but the second service was much better. Different format. It's a contemporary service. The music just really put me in a different place to be able to proclaim that message. I mean, I will be honest. I struggled with can I really say, you know, yet I still dare to hope after leaving the hospital just an hour prior. You know, it's important for us to hear a message of hope, but sometimes it's too soon. We need to kind of get a hold of you know, and a handle upon the grief that we experience and that we feel. But I still felt it was an important message to be shared. And while I could tie in a little bit, the parish knew that I was had gotten called in, and they knew a little bit about what was going on. They actually knew more than I did. They heard the news. You know, I didn't even hear the news. But that was probably one of the more difficult things too, just transitioning from the hospital to the parish.
Yeah. Hey, Father Gehring, you know, obviously a chaplain is there in kind of solidarity and with a person, whether the person has faith or spirituality or not, the chaplain is there as a fellow human being. But from your experience that day, was there a lot of faith? Was there a lot of spirituality among those who you were ministering to? Were they drawing on their spirituality to kind of deal with what was going on? How'd that play itself out in your experience?
Well, I could say some of them had more faith than others, and I can't measure their right. levels of faith, but some obviously were not as much in touch with God on a regular basis as others. Those that had a better connection with God, living their faith and perhaps even having prayer as a part of their life, were much more at ease, even though they're in a tight situation and they're still unaware of everything that's happened to them. They had a better outlook, and certainly when they saw me, they made it put them at ease. Those who were a little bit away from God, if you want to say they were away from God, they were a little bit uneasy. You know, and I first thing I would tell them is, I'm not here to judge. That's not my job. My job here is to comfort, to pray with you, to pray for you, and to help you to move ahead with your recovery. That's the basic thing that we kind of push, and that's important. Those that have a good faith base, it's very easy because it's easier to pray with them and stuff like that. And those who don't have a good faith base and are a little bit maybe even alienated from God at that point, they don't pray as easy, or they don't want you to pray.
You know, that's very interesting, because our previous guest, who works in a healthcare chaplaincy network, he kind of spoke to us about how there's research that he's familiar with, which indicates that spirituality can be a real help when a person is trying to heal, when a person is trying to kind of put their life back together from a physical illness. So it kind of corresponds and meshes mm-hmm. with your experience. So
yes, I mean, there's much been written over the past few years on, the doctors will even write articles about the people that have a spirituality or a connection with God or in their faith background heal faster.
Right.
And more completely than those who don't.
Hey, we just have about 2 minutes left. So, Reverend Binkley, is there one final thing that you'd like to kind of share with our listeners?
Well, you know, here at Orlando Regional Medical Center, our chaplain team, you know, we're really considered an integral part of the team. They seek us out. You know, the physicians will seek us out to help provide that support, because they recognize how important, you know, if folks are going through a period of traumatic distress, and how that affects a person's spirit. And so we're very fortunate, very blessed here at our hospital that they've chosen to invest in a good good chaplain team to help, you know, holistically care for our patients. And it's a privilege to be a part of an outstanding team of gifted surgeons and nurses and staff, all the way down to the environmental services folks. You know, they had their hands full that night too, as patients were coming in and going and making sure that we were ready for the next one.
Hey, Father Gehring, one final thought you have for our listeners?
The experience from my standpoint was a very positive experience, and I'm still dealing with two of the patients that are still here, the last two that remain in the hospital. And it was the ability that we had not only to deal with the patient, who at times was not fully conscious, but the members of the family that came, some of them coming from foreign countries, some of them coming from other parts of the United States, to meet and be with them, to give them the comfort that they needed. That took place, you know, in the first week following the tragic event. And it was very, very much a time when we could give them some peace and some solace and some hope, and, you know, and keep them in touch with the doctors so that they could talk to the doctors, they could ask questions and see how their loved ones would be in the process of recovery.
Hey, thank you. Thanks so much, Father William Gehring and Reverend Steve Binkley, who is both our chaplains at Orlando Health, and they were the people right on the front lines in responding immediately to the awful tragedy in Orlando. So, Father Gehring and Reverend Binkley, thanks for being with us, taking the time on Just Love, but more importantly, thank you for what you did in the aftermath of that tragedy in Orlando. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, this has not been a very uplifting show in the sense that we kind of spoke more about that awful tragedy in Orlando. But in one sense, it was hopeful because there was the ability to touch the human spirit, the ability to kind of bring comfort, bring solidarity, to get people through that. And, you know, as we heard Reverend Binkley spoke about, he could even preach on Lamentations and the hope that people can have even in those dire moments. And earlier on, we spoke about the suffering of the cross of Jesus and how we unite with that. We don't go after it. We can be a little angry at it, but ultimately we believe that it turns into the resurrection. Hey, thanks for being with us on Just Love. Join us again next week. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. Sirius XM, the Catholic Channel, 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.